The Athletic. My name is Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne. Coming up on the show this week, leaving Palace with a point thanks to Wilson's magic moment. The search for a new manager continues, and with names being chucked around like wedding confetti, we'll talk about what we know. And a little hokey-cokey from the club on clothes inspired by traditional Arab dress. Yes, hello and welcome once again to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. We are Chrisless. I'm joined this week by The Athletic's senior writer, Mr. George Corgan. And from Gallagher Shots podcast and YouTube channel, it's the podcast crossover that literally nobody asked for. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. Stephen Best. How are you doing, Steve? You all right?
Even I didn't want this, to be honest with you. Well, I'm grand. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's been lovely to be invited back on. Me and George thrashed this one out in a car park in Gateshead last Monday night. So it was all very line of duty.
Wow.
It was. I was about to say women in love. It was wrestling in front of open fire. But yeah, fine. Car park in Gateshead, whatever you want.
Absolutely. Well, George, how are you doing, mate? Are you okay? You're joining us from the Big Smoke today, aren't you? Down in that London.
Yes, I'm sorry if I don't sound quite as crisp as usual. Yes, I was at Palace on Saturday. New era part two, I think it's fair to say, after the departure of Steve Bruce, but also still pretty much exactly the same as the old era when the football then starts again, but with a few tweaks here and there.
Absolutely, everything has changed, and yet nothing has changed. As we keep saying on this podcast. Well, George, have you got anything in the pipeline this week? Is there anything interesting coming up on theathletic.com?
God knows. It's like sort of getting through this 2 weeks, churning stuff out day after day after day, and really having sort of little room to breathe. I mean, I've done a piece based on the match, but also the first sort of two or three days of Graham Jones being in charge and sort of what he did and what was said and what sort of Amanda Staveley said to the team when she met them on Wednesday. And yeah, that sense of him sort of looking to impose standards, that's the word that he kind of has used repeatedly time and time again. You know, I found one of the sort of interesting things that he said after the match was, well, you know, this is a start, you know, this is a start, but we're already 9 games into the season. And one of the things that we were sort of complaining about under Steve Bruce was that sort of sense of, well, we've got something to build on. And it's like, well, yeah, but so, and of course, Graham Jones has been around since January. So differentiating himself and, you know, sort of how he sets about. Anyway, so that piece is up, and God knows where the next few days will take us. But I'm not expecting anything imminent on the managerial front. So, we will come on and chat about that, won't we?
Yeah, we'll get into that in a bit. We've got lots to get through today. So let's start at Selhurst Park, where the boys in black and white managed to grind out a 1-1 draw against Patrick Vieira's Eagles. Mr. Best, a 0.1, that one, or 2 points lost?
I think you've got to consider that one a 0.1, to be honest with you. It was, I mean, performance-wise for me, just felt very much the same. It was the same, as was mentioned earlier, the same Newcastle that's been turning up for games for the past 24 months, longer maybe. But I suppose maybe I would say heartening perhaps that they only conceded the one, but then Benteke hit the crossbar, hit the post, put a great chance wide. I don't remember Darlow making
one chalked out for VAR as well,
that
didn't
one late on, yeah, the pull on Kieran Clark's shirt, yeah. I don't really remember Darlow making a great many saves, you know, kind of would be the flip side of that, but yeah, it's just very, very underwhelming, really. But I mean, as has been alluded to, kind of it's a the new start part 1.2 or 1.3 or whatever, and it's these things are going to take time, but after 9 games, quarter of the season, having only. Are we on 4 points now? Or is it five?
Four.
Four. It's not. It's not a wonderful start. Only
it's not looking great. Is
yeah,
it?
I mean, yeah, and only, it's Chelsea next week as well. So there's a chance there to kind of pick things up, isn't there?
Yeah. that's the thing. That's how I kind of feel. It's like, yes, I think Jones is really going there, and he was looking at a clean sheet. I mean, I think that's what the sort of plan was. Not the plan, you know what I mean? That was the sort of base that he was looking for. And fair enough, because Newcastle haven't kept a clean sheet, in the Premier League. But is it a point one when you think that we've played Palace, we've played Wolves, we've played Watford, we've played Leeds, we've played Southampton, we've played Villa, you know? So it didn't feel like a point one to me. I mean, obviously the goal was brilliant, and apparently it was a kind of brilliant atmosphere in the away end. It was very upbeat and things like that. I didn't come away from that feeling sort of upbeat about that point, because you just sort of look at the games ahead, and it felt like a win was so important, really. But
yeah, there's an awful lot of difficult ties in the next couple of months leading up to the Christmas break, isn't there? One of the things that kind of concerned me a little bit as well, George, and this is sort of related to a thing that was in one of the pieces that you wrote last week, was where one of the players, or somebody, a dressing room source, let's call it, had said, "What does Graham Jones do?" And they had said, "Fucking everything." Now, that concerns me slightly, because I think, okay, Steve Bruce might be gone, Graham Jones might shuffle things a little bit, but how much better and how much more solid are we going to get with Jones in charge? Now, I know he's there to do a job, it's an interim, it's for a couple of games, but we can't really afford to keep losing games, can we?
To just qualify that slightly, I mean, it was said with a bit of a laugh. And it was someone who was being kind of very complimentary about Jones, not the opposite. But you know, the one thing that he didn't do was ultimately decide how the team was set up, and he ultimately didn't pick the team. So yes, of course, he's been around things for the last since January. But he is very, all the soundings that kind of we've taken with Chris is that he's very highly respected. Has been really leading things on the training ground. I mean, but I suppose if you take a step back, you know, you sort of look how the final game under Bruce went, and that was a classic. And again, from speaking to people, he's effectively told people in the dressing room, "This is the first game of a new era. It's probably going to be my last game. Effectively, let's have a go. You know, let's press Tottenham." And for 5-10 minutes. You know, it worked, and it worked very well. And then beyond that, there was just nothing. And they've then gone to Palace. Jones has tried to tighten things up. And we've gone back to that sort of three at the back, five at the back system, where it's about sitting back, being organised, being disciplined, quite sort of reminiscent of the early Rafa in the Premier League days, I sort of thought. And then try and hit teams on the break. Now, if you think about that, that means they've effectively gone from one extreme to the other in terms of systems, and that's really difficult for players to switch like that. But I did think they looked a little bit more kind of organised. I did think they looked a little bit more disciplined in spite of the space that Benteke got. But you know, it's very, very tricky to try and sort of switch things around to such an extent in the space of 3 days, effectively.
Absolutely. And he did switch a few things around, and it was an interesting first 11 chosen by him, wasn't it, Bestie? But Newcastle have seemed to go back to, we've seemed to have gone back to hating the football and not wanting anything to do with it.
I think that's exactly right. You look at the team that they're picking, I mean, I don't understand the Fernandez situation, because he, to me, would have been a far more suitable choice than Emil Kraft. At centre-half. I mean, I noticed a thing a few years ago that I thought Fernandes and Manquillo worked well together. I thought Fernandes got a lot out of Manquillo, and I put that down. I wonder if it's because they're both native Spanish speakers, so that communication's better, you know. But yeah, Ryan Fraser's a funny one as well, because he was... When Wilson signed, then Fraser signed a few days later, or was it vice versa? People reminisce or hark back a little bit to that season at Bournemouth, where I think it was like Robert and Shearer almost, you know, the connection that they had. It just hasn't worked yet for Fraser. He's been injured. He's obviously, it's been more like Michael Owen in that he's done really well for Scotland, but not so well for Newcastle in that time. So Michael Owen famously doing so well for Scotland in his career. But But yeah, it was dreadful. I mean, I watched it on my phone, kind of only half paying attention because I was in hospital over the weekend with my little boy, so I was kind of a little bit kind of half watching it, half trying to feed him and, well, do what you do with kind of kids, basically. But it just wasn't. I mean, it's not going to be entertaining. I'm quite happy to, as George said, kind of mentioned Rafa earlier, grind out results, get a draw here and there, get a win here and there, the occasional 1-0. And that's how you get points on the table, and that's how Newcastle did it. Really, up until, I'd say, last winter, when everything went awful under the previous manager. But yeah, if it works, then great. But it didn't really show any signs of working particularly well on Saturday there.
No. I mean, it is a return to that more pragmatic style, isn't it, of last season? But, George, I think we have to be honest. Newcastle are lucky to come away with a point after that.
Oh, I think so, yeah. No, I mean, Palace.
I mean, Benteke could have had a hat-trick on his own.
Yeah, and he should, you know, hit the post, hit the crossbar, missed that big sitter, as we talked about. And, of course, yeah, the VAR, thing at the end. I mean, Palace fans were singing, where's the effect of how much do you pay the referee? And things like that, which is kind of... And it did feel like sort of Newcastle had the benefit of the officiating. But equally, there were sort of signs of greater sort of cohesion, I sort of thought. They did stay in shape. But, you know, it's just taking us back to this. So it's so frigging tedious, you know, this thing of what are Newcastle? Yeah. What are they trying to be? And again, I was sort of talking to someone involved in the Spurs game, and it was that sort of thing of, and I thought about this again watching Man United yesterday, where Newcastle pressed against Spurs, but they were playing a person in St. Maximat who can't press. I mean, he can't press. He doesn't want to press. Yeah,
runs.
Yeah. When Newcastle don't have the ball, he's not interested. And I am being slightly harsh there, but he's not. And so you had a midfield who was sort of also trying to press, but then you had a defence who were so attuned to sitting back that all this space was left in the middle of the pitch. And you're still trying to find a solution to that. And the thing that happens if you sit back, like Newcastle did on Saturday with whatever it was, 23% of possession, 25% of possession.
Yeah.
When St. Maximin gets the ball, he's then far more likely to give it away because it's far deeper in the pitch. And then you become under pressure again. And it's like... This is one of the things that the new owners have to work. You know, they have to work this out. What is the identity of the team? At the moment, it's just like bouncing back between extremes, trying to sort of eke out results. It's been like that for 2 years. At some point, they have to sort of decide what they want to be, what they're trying to do. But it's rock hard. Yeah. It's rock hard now in the position that they are in the table because they've got to get out of the bottom three, haven't they?
They have. I mean, it's interesting if you wanted to play that pressing game that, like you say, Sam Maximan doesn't give you an awful lot where that's concerned. The people who you want pressing are people like Almiron and Joe Willock, who are really good at it. But then you sacrifice a place and you have to think, who do we leave out, you know? Because you're not going to drop Callum Wilson. And if you're going to play those two in behind him, then someone has to miss out. And, you know, they're not going to drop Sam Maximan because he's the only spark that we have. He's the only potential point of magic, isn't he? So it's difficult. That goal by Wilson, though, bestie, that was something else, wasn't it? I've hurt myself loads of times trying to do that at seven aside.
I've been there when you've broken bones trying to do similar to that and, on football pitches too, but way back when. But yeah, it was just totally improvised. I mean, he doesn't take a touch. It doesn't even bounce before it gets to him, if memory serves. He judges it beautifully, and it's every time I see it, it's better than I remember it.
Yeah.
Because I thought, oh, it's a bit like Nolan's in the Derby that time, where he's kind of fallen backwards and just swung a leg at it. And,
no, it was much better than
But no, it's a wonderful, wonderful hit. I mean, the keeper's got no chance. Yeah. It's right in the top corner. It's a gorgeous strike. It's kind of the one bit of real quality that I remember from Saturday, to be honest with you. But that's what Callum Wilson gives you. I think he's got something like 4 in 6 now. He's been involved in that. He's the best striker we've seen at Newcastle for a long time, in my opinion.
Both goals as well, isn't it? I mean, the Spurs goal was great as well, just getting his head there.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
it was quite similar to the... sorry, George, that Spurs one... I did a Steve Bruce there. That Spurs one was a little bit similar to the West Ham one on the first game, where he just kind of times his run, gets in front of his man, and heads it home from 5-6 yards out. But yeah, his movement's excellent. He finds his space well. He's pretty... He's clinical as well. He's... If Newcastle are still in a position... come the transfer window, where they're not cut adrift in the bottom three, he'll be a probably the main reason for that, in my opinion, at the minute.
Yeah.
Absolutely paramount that we keep him fit and that we keep him firing and that we give him ammunition. And I think that's the thing that we might struggle with a little bit, because we aren't the best at creating chances, even though we have created more than last season, but based on the stats and stuff like that. But if we are going to go back to this pragmatic style where we sit back and soak up the ball and try and hit on the break, we're not going to make as many chances for Callum Wilson. So he has to be on point when he's there. And my God, he was with that goal. It was an incredible moment, George, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. And I was right across from the away end, so it was kind of lost a bit. It sounded quiet from where I was. But apparently in the away end, it was just a brilliant moment. And it's kind of nice to report and nice to hear that the mood stayed sort of buoyant in the away end, which is which is really good, because the last away match at Wolves, by all accounts, it was sort of the worst it's been for a very, very long time. And you know that when the lads and lasses who go away are sort of losing, have lost the sort of will to make a day of it, that you really are in trouble. So, I mean, so that's good. I think the mood there was very good. But yeah, I mean, like Fraser, you know, as best he says, when Fraser comes in the team, I don't think he did a lot. I mean, again, I don't think he did a lot on Saturday. It was a big decision to sort of drop Willock. But again, Willock has been a bit lost, I think, this season, albeit after, you know, not much of a pre-season. And I'm just not sure. I'm not sure where the answers are, really.
No, me neither. As far as the mood post-match goes, how are you feeling, Bestie, about what's to come? And we've got Chelsea next week, probably the toughest game of the season for us so far. I mean, there's every likelihood that we're going to get our arses handed to us by them. They look incredible at the minute. What's the feeling?
I think, I mean, Chelsea, looking at how they've started the season, that, not just the hardest game of the season so far, that could be the hardest game of the season, full stop. They don't wonder. I mean, you qualify that by saying it was Norwich last weekend, or the weekend there, beg pardon.
And that's very true.
Repeatedly on the commentary, the only Norwich player that came in for any praise was Grant Hanley. And I thought, if he's your best player, then something's seriously. Okay. And I did, the Grant Hanley, I didn't think was dreadful for us, but he was he certainly wasn't the greatest of the centre halves that Rafa brought in that summer. But yeah, Chelsea just I do think they'll probably win the league this year, looking at how they've started. That they're playing really well. I mean, when Tuchel came in last season, he sorted the defence out immediately. You've got Lukaku out for a couple of weeks. I think Havertz might be injured as well, if I've read that right. So I mean, maybe keep it down to two or three, but
they still have some quality in that squad, don't they?
Masses of it. They still have some quality. They're a fantastic side. Yeah, they're good to watch as well. It's weird because I kind of, under Mourinho, kind of, and obviously the Abramovich thing, although we can't really talk about that now, Chelsea were the kind of the team that you kind of really begrudge, because there were battlers and they were a little bit dirty. I had Carvalho at the back, and he was the dark arts, I believe they call it. He was a master at that. And John Terry as well, who had the charge sheet as long as their arm.
Yeah.
But now watching Chelsea, I wouldn't go so far as to say a nice team, but they're certainly not the kind of I don't feel the same.
They're good to watch, aren't they?
I don't feel the same level of maybe vitriol, or kind of as I did 15 years ago. They're a decent sight to watch, and I shan't enjoy watching them on Saturday, I suspect, or this weekend, beg pardon. But yeah, I think if you get anything out of that game, even just kind of not too much damage to the goal difference column, then I think you'd probably call it success.
You know, you can see what the idea will be. If Saturday was the blueprint, it's going to be just to try and stay in the game for absolutely long as possible and make it difficult for them.
Yeah.
And that, it feels like that's the best we can really hope for certainly from this point anyway.
Yeah, and poor Norwich City as well, George. I mean, we've said a couple of times that that'll be when we get our first win, but no one else, it'll probably be a Norwich win.
Yeah, that'll be when they get their first win.
Yeah, I wonder why Norwich do this to themselves every few years, though. I don't know, they might be better off just saying, let's just, you know what, lads, we'll just stay in the Championship, it's fine. We don't need to worry about the Premier League just yet. They just keep doing this to themselves, don't they?
They need a division of their own, don't they, really?
Yes, they do.
I saw a Norwich fan on, I think it might have been on Twitter this morning, saying, can we not just win the Championship every year and let someone else go up?
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what they need to do.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
I've said for a while now, and I'll not be alone in this, that the kind of the disparity of money that there is now between the Premier League and the Championship, or the Football League, you're going to get these clubs who get lost between the two. I think West Brom are probably an example of that now as well. We might be, well, if
Watford a bit, yeah.
Newcastle are more than capable of being that as well. We're not good enough for the Premier League, but we'll call it the Bobby Zamora division or something like that.
Just sits in some sort of no man's
the
land.
Jermaine Beckford or Michael Chopra division, where you're kind of the second best priest in the country or the 21st best football team in the country. It's just kind of you can't move from there. So yeah, I do feel a bit sorry for Norwich because for all the problems, they look truly dreadful. Well, I've been at Carrow Road, I think, 6 times. I've not seen Newcastle win yet. But if Norwich are guaranteed 4 points this season, then we'll get beat down there and probably draw St James's, as it seems to happen every time.
Yeah. Right, let's move on, Chops. We've got lots to discuss. We'll be back in just a second. Right then, the search for a new manager slash head coach continues, and with Graham Jones on the hot seat for at least 2 games, there's been lots of names chucked around in the press and by fans on social media this week, with Paulo Fonseca heavily linked to the job last week, and we're still waiting to see what's going to happen. Have Staveley and Co. made any ground on this? George, have we got any new info about the manager search at all? Is there anything that you need to tell us?
Well, I think having had calls at the back end of last week and again on Monday morning, I mean, I think the sort of message that's being kind of put across really is that everybody has got a bit ahead of themselves.
Mm.
But I mean, that always happens. You know, that always happens when a manager goes. You know, the race is on to sort of crown the next one, and it then feels like sort of certainly papers going from day to day, and it's a different name, it's a different name, it's a different name. So it's not a very sort of glamorous update, but it is to say that, you know, Graham Jones was told he had 2 games. You know, I think 99% certain that we will get to the end of this week and there won't be anybody in place. And it might even go on a bit longer than that. And that the word process will be our most hated phrase as Newcastle fans. You know, it used to be imminent. It used to be red flags and things like that. It's going to be process. But, you know, they deliberated and the sign-off kind of had to go back to PIF for Bruce to go, and it'll be the same with this. Now, you know, you ask about Fonseca, for example. We know that there's been a couple of conversations, you know, face-to-face over Zoom, if that's possible. Can you be face-to-face over Zoom?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're still looking at someone's face, aren't you?
Be face to many things over Zoom, from what I've seen, George.
Right, okay. I don't think they've taken it that far. I mean, and I've been told that it won't be Fonseca. I mean, I've been told that now a couple of times.
Right.
But I'm not saying that as a definitive thing, but that is sort of what I've been, you know, I have been told that. And so they're still looking. And I do think, yeah, Chris and I sort of wrote a big piece on this last week, which I think still holds true in terms of that sort of sense that, you know, from the position they're in at the minute, they don't just need a manager. They need a manager who has so many different qualities. You know, they've already said in public they want to win the league within 5 years, if possible, 5 to 10 years. They want someone to help build the club, and that's really important because, you know, the training ground has to be redone, and really, you know, you're talking about doing it from scratch over a couple of years.
Yeah.
Same with the academy, blah, blah, blah. They need someone to get them, you know, to 10th. They need someone to get them from 10th to 6th. But at the minute, they need someone to get them out of the relegation zone. And so quite who that is and how you do it is sort of really tricky. And you know, the obvious one size fits all candidate was Benitez, who knows the club and has done all those things over the course of his career. But we're just told that that's not possible, that he won't leave Everton. So who that is, though, is the interesting thing, because it's not a, you know, you couldn't put, you know, someone like Conte, for example, gets you from second to first or third to second and then second to first. He doesn't get you out. I mean, he might be able to do it. I'm not saying he couldn't do this, but that's not who they can go for right now. So, yeah, it's a fascinating situation.
Lots of names bandied around. Steven Fonseca was the main one last week, and, you know, he's classed as a fairly exciting attacking coach. Lucien Favre, also another name bandied around. He's got a bit of a history with Alan St. Maximin, but probably more pragmatic than Fonseca. What is it that Newcastle actually need right now? Because there's lots of names being linked, and I just look at them and I think, that's not what we need. that's not what we need. We don't need Frank Lampard at the minute. You know, we don't need a coach in relatively inexperienced. We need someone who's going to get us out of this absolute shitstorm that we're in and get us firing and getting the most out of these players.
Yeah, it's hard to know, really. I mean, would Fonseca have been able to do it? I know he was at Shakhtar and Roma.
We don't know, that's it.
There's a lot of names I've not heard of. People are getting excited about Mark Overmars coming in as director of football and Erik ten Hag. I hadn't heard of Erik ten Hag until 2 weeks ago, so I really don't know what he... People speak very highly of him on Twitter, although that's not always a good gauge. It's hard to know. I mean, throughout the whole process, the three names that were kind of mentioned repeatedly over the past few weeks of Lucien Favre, Fonseca and Eddie Howe, I was kind of underwhelmed by Howe because I think it kind of gets forgotten that he spent a lot of money at Bournemouth. He had a pretty catastrophic spell with Burnley as well briefly before Sean Dyche came in. But out of those names, he's the one you say, well, he's however important Premier League experience actually is, he does have it. And he has it at that end of the table as well, and also with kind of half our first team, Richie Wilson, Fraser, albeit Richie was a few years younger when Eddie Howe had him. Could he be the one? It's hard, not just who's the right man for the job, but who's going to accept the job, knowing that it's in all likelihood only going to be a couple of years for them. They can keep Newcastle up if they're successful. Job done. Thank you very much. And now we're going to get someone else in to kind of move on to the next bit. So
now Jose Mourinho's free. Let's get him instead.
Yeah, it's
you know,
it's hard.
It's a funny one, isn't it?
It's difficult, not just who we need, but a manager that needs Newcastle as well. What would effectively be a fairly temporary appointment, unless you get I'm not saying get Kevin Keegan. Please don't get Kevin Keegan. I love him, but when Ashley first got Newcastle, obviously Aldice went out and Keegan came in, and that was when that happened. That was the first alarm bell for me. I thought, oh, this feels like it's a very ill thought out, ill conceived, kind of almost just something to get the crowd on side straight away, you know, which it turned out, well, we all know how it turned out. It's got to be, would be very lucky to find someone who's going to be still Newcastle manager in 10 years' time and they've got all this silverware to their name and with this wonderful, successful club. It's going to be a gradual process. And I honestly don't know that the name that keeps on, for some reason, coming to the forefront of my mind is Chris Wilder. But that's not to say that I want him as manager, it's just someone that I think does have it, but he got relegated last year with Sheffield United, didn't he? So
yeah,
it's tough. It's really hard to say.
And obviously, George, with January just around the corner as well, a manager needs to be in place to be making those decisions, don't they, about the squad and who we need to keep and what have you. And it is really important, isn't it, that we have a successful transfer window in January?
Oh my goodness, yeah, and it gets more and more important. The more games go by without a win. I mean, on the sporting director front, I'm still told that they're at the, you know, compiling a report stage on that about what they want the club to look like and, you know, how that hierarchy works. So at the same time, I'm sure that they're, you know, kind of putting feelers out, but I think we should have limited expectations in terms of speed on that front. But yeah, in terms of January, I mean, again, and here's another sort of indication of quote unquote process, I apologize. But Frank McParland, who's widely sort of expected to take on sort of a big recruitment role, is still waiting for his contract to be signed off. And so, albeit, you know, that side of the club, you know, they can target people and they can have their plans. He can't officially get on with approaching, you know, clubs and agents and things like that, doing the stuff that recruitment people need to do because he hasn't got a job. So, I mean, we're in late October, so you might sort of think, well, you know, what's the problem with that? Well, there is a problem with that. I mean, ideally, you know, those people would be looking at the summer now, really. They'd be looking at the summer and, you know, be ready to go. Now, one of the big problems under Ashley was how long it took them to do things. And so this wasn't just a Rafa.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a Rafa complaint. It happened, you know, it happened sort of all the time that, you know, they would end up sort of making, I mean, signings often go down to the wire in windows because people are trying to save money and so on and so forth. And they're calling each other's bluff, but really they need plans ready to go for the start of the month so that they can bring people in. And so that, again, that will stay a concern until they actually have people in place able to take those decisions. Because to repeat, they're not there. They don't have official jobs, so they can't do the official parts of their job.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? There's so many moving parts to this at the minute that we have to be aware that things are going to take time. But like you say, that word process is going to start grating very quickly. What do we need personnel-wise, Bestie? Where's the squad the weakest, and how are we going to reshuffle to fit everybody into that Premier League squad?
For me, I think we're desperately in need of... And it sounds ridiculous to say it. I'm sitting here looking at the programme from the Tottenham match and Sean Longstaff's on the cover. Centre midfield, I think we're really, really short there. But we've got Longstaff, Hayden, Shelvey. I suppose Willock can drop back there. Almiron's played there quite a bit, although I don't like him there, to be honest with you.
No.
But we're desperately in need of maybe not necessarily a top class. I'm not saying like a Youri Tielemans or someone like that, but just an improvement. At centre midfield, I think if we're sticking with five at the back, I've got serious reservations about Matt Ritchie at left wing back. He's a player that I've enjoyed at Newcastle. He's a player that I thought was massively important to, well, the promotion season and the kind of first season and a half maybe subsequent to that. But at the minute, I think he is the main weak spot in the starting 11, certainly. Right across the team, I think centre halves need improving, right back needs improving. Goalkeeper wise, we're okay. Darlow had his moment again on Saturday, where he knocked Kieran Clarke outside the box, and that's always been a concern of mine with Darlow, is that he's a fantastic stopper, and he really is a very good stopper, but he's prone to these kind of almost Titus Bramble-esque moments where he'll do something outrageous, and it can cost you. It has done in the past.
Yeah.
But I think Dubravka, when he comes back, will make a difference, as he did last season. I think everywhere apart from up front, really, and you could argue St. Maximin's position, but he hasn't had a great few weeks either. So, yeah, I think you look at the whole first team squad, and there aren't many positions that don't need improving, to be honest with you.
So what I asked was, what do we need? And you've just replied with everything basically.
Maybe for Callum Wilson to stay fit as well. That might be the most important
that's
thing.
That's going
to
be a big one.
But that's, you said, I mean, you say we're okay up front. I'm not, you know, that's the problem. What happens if Wilson gets injured again? Because looking at his track record, he will.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is a big problem. And I don't think Steve Bruce was wrong in terms of the positions he was looking at. I mean, he did want another... centre half, and he did want another. He did want another midfielder.
Yeah.
And we saw Conor Gallagher, one of his targets in the summer, sort of buzzing around all over the place for Palace on Saturday. And I do. I think they need dynamism at centre half because, you know, that first instinct is still to kind of drop back. But when they do drop back, you don't think. You know, I mean, it didn't feel secure to me. Again at the weekend, but yeah, you look at the wing backs, they don't feel right. If they go to a back four, what happens? But it is also about getting more out of the players that they've already got. I mean, Jamal Lewis signed, you know, from Norwich when he was being chased by Liverpool, by all accounts, and he's just disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, Willock has kind of disappeared as a player this season. I think he was never ever going to go on the same run that he went on at the end of last season. Almiron, you know, how do they get the best out of him? How they're set up now? Where then do you move St. Maximin to? What do you do with him? I mean, it's more, you know, it's about sort of making signings who can improve the team, but improve the balance of the team. Why are we still talking about balance now? 4 years, you know,
yeah.
4 years back in the Premier League. It's astonishing. And it's, you know, Bruce was still talking about that, you know, last weekend and the weekend before. Balance. There is no balance in their squad. And again, you know, Jillinton is the big sort of case in point, that they, you know, they spend 40 million quid on someone and have no idea what to do with him. And there's been way too much of that. You know, there's just been way too much of that. So it's about having a manager and a system and players who know what they're doing and why. And but I can't, you know, it's very difficult for me to sort of see a way through that, but that's what they've got to do.
We mentioned earlier on, Bestie, that the next sort of six or seven games are going to be really difficult leading up to Christmas. We're already struggling at the wrong end of the table. Like you say, we've only got 4 points. Relegation's a real concern, isn't it? I mean, we are not quite knee-deep in the shit here, but it's over our ankles, isn't it? We're quite close to being in trouble.
Well, very close to being in trouble. I mean, we've got Chelsea and Brighton before the international break. And then December's got its usual Leicester, Liverpool, Man City, Man U, Everton.
Yeah.
And Southampton away on New Year's Day, where we're famously absolutely rotten historically. I've kind of said, oh, we'll wait until January, then there'll be a little bit of money comes in, there'll be some players coming, there'll be a manager in place by then. But by that point, I mean...
It could be too late.
I don't know about too late, but it would certainly... It could be far more a pressing concern. I mean, we haven't... I think we're one of only two or three teams not we've won yet, us, Norwich and Burnley, I believe. And you look at the teams above, and Leeds were struggling a bit, and they've got Bielsa in charge, they're more than capable of climbing the table a little bit. I was going to say Wolves there. Wolves are up to sixth now. I think they've had a great run. Watford put five past a famously defensively sound manager on at the weekend there. So
that was Rafa's come and get me play. I've already said that. That was Rafa playing for a move, wasn't it?
Earlier, shop window
earlier on, yeah. George, when he said that Rafa won't leave Everton, maybe he's just trying to take the decision out of his own hands. I'm not too sure, but we've got to all the teams play all the teams twice, don't they? So there's that, but that run we've got between now and the end of the year, it looks a bit like we're going to be more than... I remember last December, we got beat 5-2 at Leeds, and then it was dreadful until about March, I think.
It was, yeah. It was awful.
And we're more than capable of going from now until then without a win. Norwich at home on a Tuesday night might be the one that we're looking at, but then you can't take that for granted either because... Well, it's weird because we're saying all this, we don't know who the manager's going to be this time in a fortnight, or say the international break, because it's a nice kind of...
Yeah.
We don't know what the playing staff. Are we going to have a director of football? It's something that I'm not quite on the same page as a lot of people on Twitter who are getting very impatient and are kind of saying, "Oh, this needs to be sorted out now." But it is something that we could really do with having rectified shortly, because otherwise, as you say, we're getting to December, we're 5, 6, 7 points adrift at the bottom in 18th, 19th. And then that's a lot to make up. And then do you attract players? How do you... A lot's been said about Jesse Lingard's representatives, for example, apparently being at the Tottenham match. How do you attract Jesse Lingard to a team that are second bottom of the league without a win from Man United?
Yeah.
Although, I mean, Man U by that point could be third bottom the way they are going. So there's that, I suppose.
Yeah, we don't know.
It's a great point, that, because, I mean, just on the subject of relegation, I mean, I have sort of asked that question, and it's like, well... It would waste a year, you know, is how it's put to me. You know, relegation would waste a year, but you know, there would be it wouldn't mean that people were suddenly looking to try and sell the club or anything like that. But it would waste a year, and so in some ways, it's kind of heartening to hear that, because it's not like, you know, this would throw everything off. But yeah, I mean, why, if it wastes a year, why would players? Okay, so suddenly this, you know, this is ownership. You've got a lot of money and stuff like that, but you would probably wait yourself, wouldn't you? You say, oh, well, I'll wait until I know they're coming up, as opposed to thinking that they might be going down. I mean, that's why the managerial thing is so important. I mean, it is absolutely, you know, the first thing has to be that they get it right. I mean, that getting it right is the first thing, and that, I think, that is the toughest thing. But players also want certainty, and I've heard this time and time again over the past couple of weeks, that firstly, with, you know, Bruce kind of lingering on, hanging on, that there was no certainty around the training ground that week, because the expectation was amongst everybody that he would go, that Graham Jones would be in charge, that, you know, that another manager would kind of come in, and it was very awkward and it was very difficult. And in those circumstances, you can't prepare properly. I mean, however professional you are, you can't prepare properly for a match. And although there has been that kind of big lift of Bruce going, and I'm not saying that as a reflection on him necessarily, I'm just talking about the situation. I mean, it is, but it's, you know, it's also the situation. It's lifted everybody, that kind of cloud has gone. They're still uncertain, because now they've got a new manager to sort of impress, albeit one that they know, but they also know that in a week's time or 2 weeks' time or whatever, chances are that there'll be somebody else there. And so it's not good. You know, that uncertainty is not good. It's not a good base. And you know, they're thinking about their future. I mean, one, just as a very short digression, when they came in on Wednesday and basically said to them, Amanda Staveley said, as of 2 minutes ago, Steve Bruce is no longer your manager. They also sort of spoke for the first time about you know, their long-term plans about investing in the club, investing in the training ground, and saying that they wanted to speak to all the players individually to kind of find out where they saw themselves. And that's really, really good. All of that stuff is really kind of good and positive. But, you know, players sort of want to know where they fit in things on the pitch. We've seen this uncertainty week after week after week, people just not knowing what they're supposed to be doing. And at some point, they have to have that security of knowing what it is they're doing on and off the pitch, because they're not going to be successful until then.
Right, we're pushed for time a little bit, chaps, so we're going to move on. But just before we do, it's 25 years this week since the 5-0 versus Man United. Philippe Albert, Kevin Keegan, Alan Shearer, and all that. What an amazing day. And we've talked about it before on this podcast in more depth there, but I just thought it would be nice to mark that with a little nod. And of course, who could forget that goal by Philippe Albert? We'll be back in just a second.
Ginola. Beardsley. Well, there could be a fifth in the offing. Lee. On a day when Newcastle would have taken 1-0. Here they are, looking for number five. With Philippe Albert.
Right then, chaps, before we finish off, in other news this week, typically the sorts of unusual stories that we're getting now, the club have walked back a statement that they made earlier in the week about supporters imitating traditional Arab dress at the match. This has been a bit of a divisive subject, and I know some people on Twitter don't understand why this is a problem. Some people also, I know, some fans are saying that this is culturally inappropriate and that kind of thing. Bestie, the original statement asked fans to not wear this garb unless they already did, and I think they pretty much had it right the first time, didn't they?
I would agree with that, yeah, to be honest with you. It's one of the kind of the takeover, as we all know, is kind of there's a lot of conflicting emotions, a lot of it's such a sensitive subject, because I'm delighted that Mike Ashley's not in Newcastle anymore. I'm very hopeful for the future, but there is that little kind of that knowing at the back of the mind that these people that now run the football club, kind of that they're not wonderful folk. The whole thing of we've got our club back, I mean, I don't think the club's ever been kind of further away, really, in that regard. It's not the club it was, even when John Hall had it, when Freddie Shepherd, Lord Westwood. It's moved, it's a modern football club. It's probably what a competitive football club at the top of the Premier League has to be these days, unfortunately. But to me, it doesn't feel like we've got our club back, in inverted commas, at all. But that's kind of sidestepping the subject a little bit. The wearing of the headdresses in it, I've always found it a little bit, I don't know if distasteful is quite the right word. It never sat very well with us, to be honest with you. There was a photo of a pretty well-known local shop had the Saudi flag displayed quite prominently as well, and it just feels I'm a little bit uneasy with it, if I'm honest. It's not something I'm going to be an activity I'll be participating in.
George, did the club need to roll back on this? It seemed like a fairly straightforward statement when it came out, and now they've made changes to that, and they've clarified and stuff like that. But it didn't feel like it needed to be done to me.
Yeah, it's very unusual. I can't pretend to sort of say that I understand, but I do know that kind of on Friday and Saturday, they were saying that basically this has taken them sort of 2 days of their time, which really should have been, you know, used looking at other things, you know, sort of like who the next manager might be, for example. But I think sort of what happened was... that initial statement came out without it kind of being signed off elsewhere. Again, we're looking at PIF there, and that it, I mean, and although that they, you know, said that nobody had been caused any offence by it, that, you know, there was a suggestion that that initial statement perhaps had been sort of unnecessary. It's very difficult for me to sort of really understand that or talk about it much more. I mean, I will just go back though to the first day of the takeover when, you know, Amanda Staverley did kind of reconfirm the club's commitment to the Premier League initiatives, and including anti-racism initiatives, which to me is obviously, you know, very, 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 very important. And they did that, but it just felt to me like at the back end of last week, they were tying themselves up in knots for something that I just didn't really understand. I thought the first statement was absolutely fine.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think we're at a point as well where us as Newcastle fans, and based on some of the responses to this that I've seen over the weekend on social media, we have to be very careful here about being a bit too defensive about this kind of thing. And I understand there's a lot of people who think that this is just a laugh and that's just a bit of fun, but there are other people as well who don't think that, and there's a lot of people who think this is inappropriate or it doesn't sit well with them, and I am one of those people. I think we have to be careful as Newcastle fans now not to be too defensive. We are going to get questioned more and more, and there are going to be issues that need to be faced up to, and it is quite right that we are facing up to those issues. We just have to be very careful with how we react and not try and take this too personally. Right, chaps, I think that's just about it for another week. Bestie, thank you so much for coming on, mate, and giving us your time. I know you're a busy boy.
Not at all. No, I've had a wonderful time. Always nice to catch up with you lads.
Absolutely. And thank you, George, as well. Always good to hear your voice, sir.
I would much prefer to have just shut up and let the two of you chat together, but because you're so good at it. But no, great to be here.
Fantastic. And thanks a lot to all of you out there in Podland as well for listening. Until next week, from all of us at Pod on the Tyne, it's goodbye. Thanks a lot.
The Athletic.